All right. I'm going to begin the show, this week's show, a little bit differently. And I just want to say to all the critics who are listening to this right now, I know you're listening, and I know you're going to try and knock me, but I just want to say, I was born like this. And I have a gift, and I'm trying to use that gift in a positive way and make the world better. So if you're going to knock me, just try not to do something positive with your life and not negative. This is like the Roman Empire. This is like Napoleon in the Roman Empire.
I'm going to keep rocking on.
But seriously, folks, a lot of you have been going to the club, but not the bank. Okay? And I think more of you need to spend positive time focusing on success and making money and less on being at the club and being negative, because negativity will get you nowhere. Lots of fake people. I can't stand them.
Listen to what Will says, you know, when you're in your bedrooms on Thanksgiving with your to-go plates, listening to this podcast. Keep it all in your mind.
So the overreactions to the New Yorker profile have been hilarious. And boy, I am worried about the future of the show when the lamest, most ineffectual people the liberal media is capable of producing all decide to take shots at us at once. But somehow I think we'll weather through it.
I mean, to paraphrase one of my favorite Blue Nation review articles that compared Hillary to Neo, this was like the Burly Brawl scene from The Matrix Reloaded, the movie that taught me it was okay to be weird growing up. Except it's like if the fat cop from the lobby scene just duplicated himself several times.
But seriously, folks, I would like to wrap this up. I don't want to spend too much time on this by saying never have so many been so nude and mad online and we so absolutely laughing. But no, the overreaction to the New Yorker profile has been hilarious. But I do have to say the overreaction to the overreaction has been a little tiresome. And I just would like to say... be like us, never nude, never mad, never care, certainly not about our show. Let the other people be nude and mad, but not us, and certainly not on our behalf. So, fair enough?
The dry boys can handle themselves. Do not, you know, don't fire a bazooka at people on our behalf. We're growing. We're never going to stop winning. We're going to the Javits Center to take it over.
When Felix talks about not firing a bazooka, he is specifically addressing our one fan Piss Pig Granddad, who actually could to someone.
Anyway, well, I don't want to let too much time pass before introducing this week's guest sitting in this week. Oh, by the way, Matt is not with us. He's in an airport right now. He's being asked questions about his Twitter timeline and New York Magazine's The Cut by Customs in Italy, I think. But joining us this week is T., who is also known as Ricky Rawls. You may be familiar with his tweets. T, how's it going?
Oh, it's pretty good, man. How's it going?
Well, like I said, this week has been interesting. How's it been for you?
Oh, man. I got to say, the most interesting thing is you guys look exactly like the New Yorker picture.
Me especially.
Yeah, you look more like the New Yorker picture than the New Yorker picture itself. You're just...
Well, that's amazing. The other thing about the New Yorker profile is that, you know, my portrait... I have now become the baseball crank. I like that is the new baseball crank face. Is just that weird picture of me in that weird uncanny valley that where it does look like me. It really does. Yeah, but in the creepiest way.
Yeah,
imaginable.
It looks like you should be on some kind of registry or something, right?
A registry of sweet good boys.
Baseball crank and his like five fans are like passing around Menaker stickers.
He's been coming to your defense. It's kind of weird. He's what? Like,
has he? That's not a windup. Like, I thought that was some fake account.
I think it's a fake account.
Oh,
yeah, it
okay.
is. Yeah,
because his because the display name is Angry Baseball Man. So I don't think he changed that.
Well, the fact that I'm seeing those tweets, I think is.
I thought it was a plot twist.
No, actually, Fifth Mike, Dan McLaughlin. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're getting ideologically diverse on the show now.
No, I thought maybe you converted him. Now he's like an irony boy or something.
This week, things are going pretty good for us, but again, pretty shitty for everything else in the world, which is always nice. And I don't know. I mean, there's a couple of things I want to talk about. And I guess like the first thing I want to discuss is something that's been in the news a lot this week that I think is worth bringing up. This the quote, the alt-right think tank conference that went down in D.C. Was it this week or last week? And the sort of newfound media profile of Richard Spencer, the dapper, handsome. You haven't, folks, you haven't seen a Nazi this dapper since Helmut Lang. But
and it's weird because he's not even like that dapper. No. Like it's like he's just not a slob. And somehow that's like he's like a GQ like cover guy. It's the strangest.
No, I can relate. I mean, when you have like when there's such a low bar, like. I think that I'm like a Chicago 7, I'd say. But
neo-Nazi 20.
Right. I'm a media 10. I'm a media 10 because I am not outrageously fat nor rail skinny. I, you know, picked up heavy stuff. I have deltoids that look like they were carved out of stone. I'm beautiful. I'm powerful. No, I'm not that hot, but by the standards of the media, I'm extremely hot. Richard Spencer, by the standards of Nazis, is he's like Dolph Lundgren. But if you just like saw him in the street, you'd be like, who's that gamer who's retaining some water?
Yeah, exactly. He's just like a bloated regular guy, and he's like that. The tone was so swooning on that.
I think in one of the profiles, like I think maybe the LA Times even has like sunglasses on in the picture that he is.
Where's he got a style profile? Alex Jones got a style profile in the Washington Post. Where's my profile? Why can't I be an icon? Well, yeah. I'll be a Nazi, sure. Yeah, Nazism, it's great. So, but let's talk about my bow tie collection.
Yeah, I think liberals would hate you less if you came out as a Nazi.
At this point, that's probably true. It's just sort of like so the media is covering this. You know, like now this is a real thing. There was a news cryon on CNN that was like alt-right leader. Are Jews people? Question mark. And I gotta say, like as much of a joke as I find CNN and the alt-right, that's still sort of a queasy thing to see on a news program being discussed. And we're going round and round in the circle. Like, how do we react to this? Like, what do we call them even? Like, there's this debate about, saying alt-right, like, is that, like, normalizing them to too much of a degree? Should we just call them Nazis? And, like, I don't know how to feel about that. I mean, like, does it really matter? Because to me, like, calling them Nazis is maybe giving them a little too much credit, even though that is basically what they believe in.
Yeah, because the Nazis, like, say what you will, but they accomplished a lot. These guys aren't, you know, I don't know. Like, getting out of the basement is a big deal. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they get owned all the time online. Like, it's not...
Yeah, I don't know.
The Nazis had bigger fish to fry than being banned from websites, which, like, seems to... Like, imagine if, like, half of Mein Kampf would be like... And another thing, when they kicked me off the Telegraph service, that was totally unfair.
I mean, the idea is, like, you know, we've always thought of them as a joke, but I gotta say, after Trump won the election, it's a little bit more difficult because, look, their guy won. And they're feeling their oats right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, T, like you made a good point about how this whole debate over like what we call them is just like another, it's like a false debate and it's one they want you to have, basically.
Like, I think it's the only tool the liberal media has is to call things out. And they can't just not do anything. But they can't just admit the impotence. So they have to just be seen being active. I think that's their thing. So they have to just... seem like they're doing something at all times, even if it's the same impotent tool that got them here to begin with. So it's like that one day, about 90 times, I'm not even exaggerating, on my timeline, I just kept seeing, alt-right? Why not call them Nazis? And I guess it's like a weird kind of virtue signaling or whatever, I don't know, but it's like, okay, so they're Nazis, now what? Like, they're not even really high. I mean, the guys... doing a Hail Hitler salute in D.C. in front of a bunch of cameras. Like, I don't think you're really like outing him. Like, you know, he's not really trying very hard to hide this.
Like, and like the important thing, and I think what this reveals is that I think people genuinely don't know what to do about this.
Yes.
I think people don't know how to respond. I mean,
and people should admit it. Like, people just don't want to admit, because the same way they can't admit, hey, we had no idea what was going to happen in this election, they can't admit they have no idea how to fucking deal with this.
And yeah, I don't know how to deal with it, because I mean, like I said, I don't want to overestimate these people's influence or numbers. But at the same time, look, the election of Trump, I really think, has mainstreamed, or like it brought to the fore, this kind of white nationalist shit in a way that I would have thought of was unthinkable, like even a year ago.
Yeah. But,
like, T, you know, you actually, you did an interview recently with Thought Catalog, right?
Yeah.
About this topic, right? And, like, because you've, like, interacted with a lot of these guys on Twitter before, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I used to actually be a conservative. Like, I was a black conservative, God help me. And so, like, I had a blog. It started, like, in the tail end of the Bush years. And that was when the whole compassionate conservatism thing was happening. And that was when they were trying to sound like kind of coherent and rational. And then when Obama came, everything kind of changed. And then like a lot of the stuff that they were talking about, a lot of people on the right, all of a sudden like racial Tourette's happened. And people just, yeah, just people would just like say things like, you know, I don't like Obama because he's socialist. And he's doing all this stuff. Plus, you know, he's black. And like, people just slide that in. It's like, okay, wait a minute. It kept getting harder and harder to stay in that camp and not align yourself to like more overt racism. So like I've seen these people for years because like, you know, I've seen them just come out and more overt, which is why I think I kind of understand a lot of how they think, because, you know, they rebranded themselves like 6 times. They were like neo-reaction
one year.
1 year to the Dark Enlightenment, and they had more. I can't even keep track of all of them. And it's like each time they come out, the same thing happens. A whole wave of articles comes out, and they say, "Who are these people? The new movement that you have heard, neo-reaction." And then like a year later, the new movement, the Dark Enlightenment. These are the same guys. You can cut and paste the names out.
Well, in the interview, I think you make a really good point. And I just want to read really quickly from what you said. Like you said, this is actually what the alt-right is. It's pre-existing white supremacy that has become more vocal due to a racial form of narcissistic injury. In fact, one of the heroes of the alt-right, Charles Murray, wrote a, quote, sociology book that where the title of which was Losing Ground. And that's basically how they feel. They're only 2 laps ahead and instead of 3, and that's unbearable to their narcissistic sense of racist entitlement. This so-called PC culture that they pretend oppress them and force them to come into existence is really just women and people of color not letting them insult them at will, which is, to a narcissist, is their right to do to those they perceive as inferior. Not only is mistreating perceived inferiors without consequence a right narcissists feel entitled to, it's actually one of their major sources of joy in life. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that's a really good point that speaks to this kind of like rebranding. It's like these are the same people. It's the same impulse towards white supremacy. But I think now they're just becoming more and more out with it, or just like more and more open. And they get off more and more about just saying these things. Yes. To a greater degree. The point about Charles Murray is a good one. I mean, Andrew fucking Sullivan in the New Republic like ran that bullshit back in the 80s. Yeah. And like liberals are taking that shit seriously, too.
And you know, to go back to something you said earlier, when that thing came out, about what was it? Our Jews people,
right? Right.
And people were freaking out. I'm like, okay, how do you think black people felt when the New Republic has a whole issue? You know, our black subhuman, whatever. You know, and there are people in the media, same ones freaking out now. Like I'll name one, like Damon Linker. There's some other ones.
Fan of the show, friend of the show, fan of me personally.
I was on Twitter, and he was like, you know, it was heroic what New Republic did because, you know, it was actually anti-racist because at the end, they decided it was blacks aren't subhuman. you know, I was like, wow, gee, thanks. I was trying to talk to him and say, okay, look, don't you understand just posing the question is ridiculous? And I used a specific example. I said, and he's not the only person I've said this to. There are several others, but he's probably the most annoying one out of everyone I argued with. But I said, can you imagine if someone said that about Jewish people or the Holocaust? And he's like, oh, well.
I actually say that every day.
Yeah, so it's funny to see the same people like just flip out over this. And I'm just like, okay.
And another thing I saw this week, and I think you responded to it as well. Also a friend of the show, Boss Ross Douthat, had some take where he was like annoyed that the media was talking about Richard Spencer or like building him up in such a way. But his response to that was like, all these journalists should interview Steve Saylor instead. Who's
what does that even mean? Like, what is he getting at?
Steve Saylor and Richard Spencer are like the same fucking person. I don't understand what the difference is. Yeah. Steve Saylor calls himself a race realist instead of a white nationalist. Like, what the fuck?
And it's like narcissism of small differences or whatever, but what was his point there? I didn't even understand what his point was.
I didn't quite get it either, but like name-checking Steve Saylor in some kind of weird positive context while that, is odd.
We already have race realists. We don't need more.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Ross's response is like when you ask your mom to take you to McDonald's and she's like, what? We have ground beef here. We already have a perfectly good race and IQ guy.
Yeah, but Ross, I don't get that guy. Like, he's like the single-handed biggest argument against like the illusion of meritocracy. Like,
we're big fans of Ross.
we've covered him extensively.
But the best thing I think he's done is inspire. What's that, Ralph Douthat?
Oh hell yes!
Like,
oh my god, the best account on Twitter.
Like, that is the best justification. That's the best thing he's indirectly, I think, done.
Mrs. Krabappel and Principal Skinner were in the closet making babies, and I saw one of the babies, and the baby looked at me.
Have you ever read his replies? Like, the people who actually think he's, like, you know, really dropping heat?
Yeah.
Like, those are some scary people, man. Like, it's...
I don't want to do that.
The Ross stands.
Yeah. They're trying to drag Ross. Protect.
We've been zinged by the Ross rowdies again.
No, but like, I don't know. With this like alt-right shit, I mean, it's nothing new, but it is weird. Like, I feel like it's a weird moment in politics. And the fact that these people feel any self-confidence at all, I think, is disgusting. And they should be just confronted at every fucking possible opportunity. Like, I don't think they should ever... like. Be made to feel comfortable just goose stepping around this country or just feel as free as they do to come out with this shit.
Yeah, there's one thing I like about this, and it's bad to say you like anything about this, but the one thing I like about this is I feel like, as far as for black people goes, if Hillary won, it would have just been the same sense of complacency. You know, she would have been, you know, dancing to trap music. She would have been doing whatever the new thing was. Like, you know, she would just be name dropping.
He's like,
something
stupid. I'm glad to invite Ray Schremer to the White
House. I may not be Chief Keith, but I hate being sober.
Yes.
He's like, when I was growing up, the Beatles were my favorite group. Now the Black Beatles are in the White House.
I feel like, you know, the 8 years of Obama, I think, was kind of a golden era of media identity politics. Like,
yeah,
they would let you do like five pieces in a row about, like, what does this movie say about, like, toxic masculinity? Let's do four pieces from four different people. And now, like, people aren't going to want to be reading that.
No, right? They want to read about what this podcast says about toxic masculinity.
Yeah, basically.
Another thing that you have told people and that on Twitter and elsewhere is, like, you've been very critical of, I guess, what you call sort of the representative change Twitter, or like this certain kind of identity politics that, like, you know, that sees movies and television and kind of like entertainment about tailoring it to, like, you know, to more reflect the values and population that see it. Like, could you like talk a little bit about that?
Like, for example, Hamilton. Like, I see
what's
Hamilton.
What's this that you speak of?
Yeah, you guys might have heard about this thing called Hamilton. Like, a lot of people I know, it's like, they're like, oh my God, Hamilton, it's such a great progress for black people. And I'm looking and I'm like, okay, it's black people playing slave owners. Like, I don't even say, like, why is this progress? Like, isn't this crazy thing? People, right, take the actual play and look at it as facts. So then they'll use facts from the play to, like, defend it. So they'll be like, well, no, well, Hamilton, he was a scrappy immigrant. Like, look, that's not actually what Hamilton was. Like, that's a play. Like, it's not, like, you can't use the play to defend. But all they care about is, like, okay, we have black people in Hamilton. So this is good. And then white liberals pat themselves on the back. And to me, I think the most telling sign is that Mike Pence even wants to see the thing. Because if this was anything remotely good or positive about black people, like, to me, it's like the biggest red flag. Like, why does Mike Pence even want to go to this thing? Like, Mike Pence likes it because he gets to see black people pay homage to what might have been his ancestors. Here's something else, right? A bunch of white liberals were getting all excited because there was some kind of program where they're taking inner city black kids and taking them to see Hamilton. You guys heard about this?
No, I haven't, but...
You guys haven't heard about this? Okay.
No, I did hear this.
Okay, so you're going to take kids from the inner city, like where rap was made, and then you're going to make them watch other black people perform white rap. like, how is this helping anybody? Like, these kids grew up with rap. Like, why are you exposing this shit? All you can do is make rap worse. That's probably the only effect. You have a generation of black kids who can't rap.
A little known fact, busing kids to see Hamilton is actually what Hillary's education advisor proposed replacing public schools with. That and apps. We'll teach them to code, and then as a reward, they see Hamilton. They see it once a week.
That's actually what Pizzagate is. The Podestas were transporting vulnerable youth to make them see Hamilton, and they're going to be doing a gas price sentence for that. That's
Felix. That actually does sicken me to think of. That actually turns my stomach. But No, I think, like, when we first talked about Hamilton, I said I listened to the soundtrack, and like all the fucking raps did sound like it was the exact same style of, like, the fucking, like, white kid backpack rap where they're just like, my mind is the metaphor of the Constitution of the international solution. Like, it's like that shit.
Well, what I like about Hamilton is that, and maybe you guys just don't like this, it's like proof, finally, that rap can be about intellectual things and not just bitches and bling, as the Vox writer, Zach, or maybe it was Todd, whatever. That's, you kind of have to read between the lines.
Allegedly, that's one interpretation.
And I'm sure he's listened to, like, a lot of rap, so he would know.
Todd Vanderwolf, like,
that was him, yeah.
He like, owns all the Brother Lynch hung and X-rated, like, even the shit X-rated pressed when he was in prison. And he heard Hamilton, like, the 10 horse buggy commandments, and was like, this is even better.
He went home and threw his Uncle Murda albums out. He was like, this is trash, I'm done with it. But, like, okay, so, like, this kind of representation issue, like, obviously it's now, the limits of this has been revealed, but, like, you think that, like, it's tricky because, like, you think it sort of comes from a place that, like, is reasonable in a certain way, that, like, people want to see themselves reflected in the media that they consume.
I think it's not a bad thing until it becomes the only thing.
Right.
You know, like, that's the thing. Like, it's the same thing with identity politics. Like, I actually, like, someone might see my Twitter feed and think I'm against identity politics, but it's not that I'm against it. I'm against how superficial it's become, like, how superficial and cosmetic. And I'm against that there's people out there who will make that, like, everything. And if you speak to, like, actual people struggling, you know, they're thinking about more than identity politics.
And it's sort of like, it's similar to your point about sort of how the alt-right tilts against this windmill of PC culture that they say they're reacting to, which is really it's similar, like identity politics arose as a reaction to white identity politics, basically.
Yes, yes.
And so like that in and of itself is a necessary development, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But like we've sort of come to the point now where the people, the party, the Democrats or liberals who's supposed to be against the sort of cultural reaction and racism in our society represent that and literally nothing else. They're a party of Wall Street. They're a party of empire. And like it, that's limited even to like, and not only that, but it doesn't even work to protect the people that are supposedly vulnerable because they just lost this election to probably one of the worst candidates in modern political history.
I think it's just easier to do. Like, it's just easier to just dab in response to, you know, like
crushing inequality and immiseration of vast swaths of the American population.
Well, that was the gamble that Hillary's campaign made. You know, we're just going to dab our way through this and we'll put together a 51% coalition.
Basically, that's not even a joke.
Like, and she's not like Obama's charismatic enough to make it work.
Yeah.
To go to the question, like, I think because it was working, and because it's easier to do, I think that's why they kind of fell into the trap. Because if you can get the votes doing something, why are you going to do the harder thing? So I think now that black people didn't come out to vote, it's kind of going to force them to it should force them to rethink it. I don't think it actually will. I think they're going to double down. Have you guys ever heard of a book called When Prophecy Fails?
No, I don't think so.
This is a pretty interesting book, right? And the reason the book was on my mind is because I thought I was going to use this book to talk about the alt-right, because I thought, like most people, that Hillary was going to win. I actually thought Trump had a chance up until the grabbing pussy thing. And I thought, okay, they got him. Like, I was being very contrarian the whole way. I'm like, you guys are underestimating him.
One thing, you were right about the debates.
Yeah,
I thought Hillary technically won the debates, but the idea that it was a complete washout, I thought Trump did well in those debates, despite looking.
Yeah. I may be misremembering this exit poll information, but I believe they asked of people who decided based on watching the debates, it was 52% of them decided to vote for Trump.
Yes, yes, yeah, I know exactly. I read the same thing. I think it was Ezra Klein. He was one of those people that said, "Oh, Hillary smashed all three debates." And then Ezra Klein, to his credit, he said, "I was wrong. I thought the debate said one thing, but based on these exit polls, you know, the same thing that Virgil just said." He said, most people, and like, I was talking to my friend about this at the time. I said, "You know what? I think Trump won." And he goes, "Yeah, but he sounds like an idiot." I'm like, "But there's a lot of idiots out there." like you're thinking like a smart person.
I want to get back to what you were saying, like the book you were talking about, When Prophecy Failed. Like, you, like most of us, thought Hillary was going to win, and you thought that this book would be relevant to like the alt-right who put all their hopes in what.
Okay, so When Prophecy Fails is a book. I'm sure everyone's heard the term cognitive dissonance.
Sure.
You know, it goes around a lot. Well, this is a book written by the guy who coined the term, Leon Festinger, right? He coined the term cognitive dissonance. He's a psychologist. And he coined the term by studying cults. And because, you know, I think of the alt-right as being very cultish, I was like, man, when Trump loses, this is exactly what's going to happen with the alt-right. And I think I might have even like tweeted about this a while ago, like months ago, like, you know, like, remember this book, it's going to be... But, you know, ironically, when Hillary lost, I now think, and I think one of you guys said this last week, I think Hillary's people are more of a cult. When you guys said it, I'm like, it's so true.
It certainly seems that way.
Well, some of them, the most vocal, are as like, devoted as any other.
Yeah. We have to clarify, right? Because your critics were coming at you about that today, about trying to say that you were...
like everyone who voted for her voted Democrat.
Which is not clearly what you meant.
You're trying to say that the grandmother of a union auto worker and Black Lives Matter activist is a freak? How dare you,
sir? She knows that's not true. That's the worst part. That's so intellectually dishonest. But yeah, a certain type.
Yeah, like the people who were writing for Lenny Letter, the article we wrote from Lenny Letter, the Medium posts, the basically anyone who's like, we let Hillary down.
Yeah.
Because like, no, but what you're saying, like, what I said is like, the people who really, really liked her and really, really wanted her to be president, and not just that they didn't want Donald Trump to be president, they should be mad at her because she fucked them over.
Yeah.
She fucked up.
Yeah, yeah. Right. But it's even worse because she's kind of like an empty vessel, and it's just kind of just filling. She's like a, I don't know what they see, but there's something that I guess she's just an empty vessel enough that you can just kind of fill it with whatever you want to see there and get obsessed with it. But when prophecy fails, right, this is the premise of the book. So Leon Festinger and his people, they study a doomsday cult. Now this cult, this is what the cult is, and I'm reading from a summary of the book, right? The authors comprised a research team who conducted a study of a small cult following of a Mrs. Marion Keach, a housewife who claimed to receive messages from aliens via automatic writing. The message of the aliens was one of a coming world cataclysm, but with the hope of surviving for the followers who listened to them through Keach and other selected mediums. So the psychologists were like, okay, this is obviously not going to come true. All these people are quitting their jobs and just following this office worker who's just receiving messages. Let's just follow and see what happens when the prophecy doesn't come true. So he follows them. They just keep waiting, and it doesn't come true, of course, because we're all here.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, spoiler alert. And then what Festinger and his associates demonstrated in the end was that the failure of prophecy often has the opposite effect of what the average person might expect. The cult following often gets stronger, and the members even more convinced of the truth of their actions and beliefs. So Festinger, this is a quote from him, "A man with a conviction is a hard man to change."
Yeah, I mean, this is something that we saw on like the international politics stage. After the war between Armenia and Azerbaijan a few years ago. I mean, Armenia is a far poorer country than Azerbaijan.
Felix is wants to center this conversation back in his wheelhouse, which is
it is barely a country. It is not even a colony.
But far fewer soldiers, worse equipment, fewer allies. They're a landlocked state, and they crushed Azerbaijan in this war. And Azerbaijan responded by getting deeper into sort of like pan-Turkic Ottoman racism and anti-Armenian psychosis. It's like oftentimes when your entire worldview, whether it's Hillary is mom and she's going to kill Dangerous Donald, or, you know, the great pan-Turkic people rose from the mountain and they will destroy all enemies, when the world disproves that view, you're probably going to double down on it and get a little crazier.
Yep. And that's where the cognitive dissonance, you know, he coined it from that, and it's been proven over and over. So the fact that they're doubling down the liberal media with this Hillary obsession doesn't surprise me. Like, there's three elements that a Festinger says, you know, you got to have for it to happen. And it's like, okay, first is a belief held with deep conviction, along with respective actions taken. And, you know, I think that's an easy one to hit. The other one is the belief or prediction must be specific enough to be disproven. So, you know, losing election is it. The other thing is you have to have given up a certain amount where you can't turn back. And The Hill had an article after Hillary lost talking about all these people who were measuring the curtains in the White House. Very mentally invested, like, you know, she's gonna win, I'm gonna be in the press, I'm gonna have some kind of job with her. So they did all this stuff, the reputations are shot, you know, all these jobs they banked on didn't materialize. Trump is coming, nobody's gonna want to hear about, you know, their articles about, you know, why Beyonce is Slay Queen. people aren't going to want to hear that. So that's why they have to blame you guys. You know, they have to double down, blame everybody but themselves. Like, with this doomsday cult, everybody got more involved in the doomsday cult, was what basically was the end result of when prophecy fails.
This thing happens over and over again. There was a similar thing in the 19th century, the Millerite cult, which was in upstate New York. It was another Book of Revelations. It was more explicitly Christian. It wasn't aliens, but they were, you know, Book of Revelations. They predicted over and over again, the world is ending on this date. And then it came and went many times, and every single time the cult got bigger.
Yeah, yeah. That's even better.
It gained numbers.
So it actually grew.
So it's not just the people who are already involved in it who are doubling down, but they're attracting new followers.
So that's actually worse than when prophecy fails. Yeah. When prophecy fails, it's the same people, but it just kept getting more obsessed.
What have we always said on the show? When your prophecy fails, your prophecy will succeed later. Your prophecy has to fail to succeed first.
The prophecy will still come true. Hillary will win in 2020.
See, I think the election has broken a lot of people, especially now that Trump won. People are feeling lost and afraid, but I think this is going to burble down. But to swing back around to what we were originally talking about, I got to say I am a little bit more concerned with the hard right wing and sort of just neo-Nazis in America. And I guess the question I want to ask is, like, we've done it. They are laughable. Like, is it enough to make fun of them or point out how foolish they are? Or like, because, like, when I look at these people and I see a Twitter account that, like I said, it's superfluous to make fun of them because the term anime Nazi perfectly describes their personality, character, and beliefs. Anything to say after that is superfluous. But I imagine, like, I mean, these people's lives must be fucking miserable. But, like, is that enough? I mean, like,
racist, you know, I think the alt-right, it's a form of racial narcissism, right? And narcissism is all about, okay, I really hate myself deep down. Like, I'm gonna get a little metaphysical here, but
no, go for it.
Okay. Like, you know, like, energy can't be created or destroyed. You can't create or destroy matter. Like, I feel like emotion, your personal energy, is like the same way. If you hate yourself, it came from somewhere. Like people shitted on you. Maybe something happened. Your parents hated you. They put that negative emotion in you. Now, your choices are, you either have to transmute it, turn it to something good, or you have to shift it to somebody else. So they have to kind of, if they're not constantly shifting this hatred on somebody else, it's going to consume them. Because they have no idea how to transmute this thing. So it's like, it's a form of mental relief. They're always constantly offloading it, which is why they can just keep making bigger asses of themselves. Like, if you see clips of people, like, there's that Matt Forney clip where he's walking with the crazy, with the crazy legs, and it's like, like, for me, if you put that video out of me, I would just go in hiding. I would move to a different country. I would get a wig. Like, he'll just come out the next, like, he's so, like, you get so consumed with shame, you can't allow yourself to feel it at any given. So when you mock them, they're just going to come back harder. They won't let themselves even comprehend the joke.
Right.
It's a defense mechanism.
And they are humorless. So that also makes sense.
Yeah, they're very, very humorless. Like, you know, you'll bring up, like, hey, you have a Nazi anime avatar and your name is, like, Goebbels Cock 88. And, you know, they'll be like, yeah, so?
this is a total aside, only tangentially related, but a little bird just came through today and sent me Matt Forney's high school yearbook senior photo.
Wow. And, that is not tangential. That is right on target.
First off, and I'm sorry to the listeners, you can't see this, but here he is.
Oh, my gosh.
Right?
Let me see.
he has kind of like Charlie Brown hair. Virgil. Like, I always wonder what that thing was.
Virgil.
Yeah. What's up, Felix?
Can you DM it to me? Because I'm not in the room.
Yeah, of course I can. But I do want to right now read you the quotes. There's two quotes. First off, happiness consists of getting your hair cut every 2 weeks and watching your neighbor fall off his roof, Lin Yu Tang. I've never heard that. I don't know who that is.
What?
I
it's funny that happiness is a haircut.
I think that's like...
he must be fucking miserable.
That sounds like a really just like a twisted random thing. Like that'd be on like a it's Hot Topic like, shirt. Like,
wait, who is the quote from?
Lin Yutang.
So it's like a proverb or something? It's I like don't. Supposed to meditate on that?
Yeah.
It's in probably. Papyrus font.
It's in papyrus font. The second quote, here's a little juicier. The evil of the world is made possible by nothing but the sanction you give it, Ayn Rand.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it also says band, 9-12, jazz ensemble, 11-12, purple and gold, 11. Just 11? What happened?
How do you get into Ayn Rand in high school? I guess this...
Oh, that's the only time it's going to hit. That's when it happens. Just yeah, on the humorless... Yeah, yeah. Just on the humorless thing, I this occurred to me now, and I'm happy I was able to remember the tweet, and I found it. I guess this was last year. Someone was engaging with an alt-right guy, and I don't remember the context. All I've got is this one screen grab, but the screen grab is the handle and the display name is Revive Eugenics, and they're asking someone sardonically, how am I fascist? And I don't know what the rest of the conversation was, but that sort of gives you an idea of their irony radar.
Mm-hmm. I'll say the only way mocking them works, like the real way to get back at a narcissist is you have, like the attention you give a narcissist is narcissistic supply. Like just giving them attention is a form of payment. But if you make the narcissistic injury of interacting with you outweigh the narcissistic supply, then they don't like to interact with you anymore. And that's, so it's not just mocking them. You have to mock them in a way that outweighs whatever benefit that the attention is. So it's like, if you don't really understand what their buttons are, so that you can, when you mock them, that you can really, like I'll give an example of a interaction I had with an alright person that was like bothering me. So this guy's bothered me, and he's showing me all these things that white people invented. And he's like, so he's coming at me. He's like, you know, white people invented this.
Castles, horses,
Harry Potter, Hamilton, Hunger Games.
Yeah. So
rivers.
So he keeps coming at me, and he's like, you know, black people never did this. Black people never invented writing, they never knew language. So he even said languages. So I guess he just thought people were just sitting around waiting for white people to come. Like they couldn't communicate with each other because they had no language.
Latin until, was the first language.
Yeah. So he's saying this stuff, and then what a lot of people will do is they'll be like, you know what? Like there were facts that I could have come back with him with about what like things that black people invented. But I'm like, if I even validate the argument, that's gonna give him a certain amount of narcissistic supply because what he has is on the other end, he's going to have a whole list of things that he wants to hit me with.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, I'm not even going to go there. So I'm like, what's the last big accomplishment that you did?
Ooh.
He's kind of like, yeah, I guess you got to take the truth bombs. And I'm like, the guy just wants to keep going back to the inventions. And then...
The windmill, the helicopter.
Canals.
His papers are getting all
ruffled. Yeah, yeah.
So bow tie spinning.
So then I'm like, you know, I'm going to do...
Can I just talk about the parts again? Can we talk about the parts?
So the parts.
Oh, hold on. So then
I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm even going to help you out. Maybe you're right. Even though I don't believe it, as I said, I'll go along with them. I'm like, you know what? Maybe you're right. You know, but I don't change the fact that you've done nothing with your life.
This reminds me of when Sam Chris, one of those alt-right guys was in his DMs and he's like, I have more money than you'll ever have. And you couldn't live in the forest. And Sam goes, that's all fiat currency. And I will meet you in the forest right now.
No, like, no, Sam said that's all Jew controlled fiat money. So technically it's mine.
See, that's like perfect. Because it goes right back to what bothers them.
Right.
It's just such a good fucking point. Is like, the idea is like, you can never argue with these people on their terms.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Like if you respond to it like as you would a regular person in an argument, like you've already lost.
Exactly.
This point about, well, what the fuck have you ever done it cuts to the heart of it, because that's what like they really believe, like the glory of our race and our forefathers and shit. Well, it's just like, well, fucking be proud of something you've done in your life.
What have you done for white people lately?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And like this whole shit about like white birth rates and we have to protect the future of our white children. It's like, dude, just have children. Oh yeah. Wait, you're unfuckable dullard who will never reproduce.
I'm like, and the same guy. So I went to his profile, because the profile is always gold.
Hilarious.
The profile will never disappoint you. Never. So I go, and he says he has MGTOW. You know, men going their own way.
Oh, hell yeah.
You declared yourself a genetic dead end. Your genes literally want to stop there. Your genes listen to this podcast, and they're like, no, we have to. The end of the line.
I think to wrap things up, injure a narcissist today, people.
I do want to say one thing, though, about the Spencer thing. You know, I think it's something that we'll have to chew on and kind of think about, you know, the proper response. And there were, you know, there were anti-fascists out there protesting these people.
Which is a good thing.
Yeah,
it's an unequivocally good thing, because it kind of like responds to the liberal brain that's obsessed with propriety. And it's like, no, we can't be seen as violent or aggressive in any way. And the only thing I really worry about, and this kind of like ties everything together, is like who will be the first liberal have to listen to both sides guy who's like, you know, Richard, Spencer, I disagree with you, but hey, I'll meet you for a beer at the Capitol pub, and we'll hash things out about the inferiority of my race.
I'm putting my marker down on Damon Linker right now for that.
Yeah, no, I'm going to say that Damon Linker will write the book Applebee's Beer Hall Pub.
Schnitzel America.
Actually, I want to answer one question you guys asked. I think it's important, because you kept asking, like, what should we do in response to Richard Spencer and whatever? And I think one of the big reasons why these people have been able to proliferate so much is because these people are actually building like coalitions. I mean, coalitions of losers, but it's still a coalition. Like, their vote counts. And I think the most important thing that I think can be done is, I think whatever the opposition is, the Democratic Party is going to have to be like, realistically, this is a two-party system, at least for the near future, is I think the infighting on the left, a lot of people are just reverting to the whole civility knee-jerk response, like, let's stop infighting, guys. We have a common enemy. And I think that's the wrong way to go, because if they don't do the infighting,
right,
it's just going to revert back to type. You know, they're going to have Hillary 2.0, or they're going to have something else.
Cory Booker.
Yeah, Cory Booker. I think the infighting, if anything, turn it up. I think if anything, just keep infighting, because
this is the perfect ending to the show.
Yeah.
And this week, really.
Yeah, I think just let it go to fever pitch. Let people hear the ideas. Eventually, because I like what Bernie Sanders is doing. I feel like Bernie Sanders took the momentum after Hillary's loss, and he's just like, I like everything that he's been doing.
He's out front. I mean, he's on. Yeah.
He's taking leadership while Hillary is like going to fundraisers to like give Uber to kids in Haiti or something.
Yeah, it's true.
And going, Bernie is like fucking out there. He's talking about the pipeline. He's like fucking opposing Bannon. He's doing all this shit.
Yeah. And
like,
and
he's a leader.
And a lot of liberals take things at face value. So when Bernie says, hey, Trump, we're willing to work with you if you do X, Y, and Z for the working class, etc. And then a lot of liberals are like, well, see, Bernie, he's not so good after. I'm like, you guys don't get it. He knows Trump can't do it. He doesn't want Trump to be able to say, oh, I can't do it because these guys didn't want to work with me.
Yeah.
You know, he's kind of setting him up.
T, thanks so much for joining us this week.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Check him out on Twitter if you haven't already. Till next time, guys.
Till next time. Maybe you should say his screen name again.
Oh, yeah.
The screen name on Twitter is Ricky Rawls. That's R-A-W-L-S. No underscore or anything.
Oh, right. Because, like, this will be... sorry. Yes. Throw him a follow on Twitter if you haven't already.
The Ricky underscore Rawls is... he's actually a white supremacist. So don't follow that.
Follow him too.
Yeah, both sides.
Gotta hear both sides. If you're a liberal, follow Ricky Rawls too.
Cheers, guys. Right. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Who makes the Nazis? I'll tell you who makes the Nazis. Who makes the Nazis?